Today is Friday, April 17th. This is VOA's International Edition. I'm Lori London in Washington. Coming up, while the United States looks to reopen its economy, the virus is still killing people.
600 people died yesterday from the disease.
More devastating economic news on the number of people without jobs in the U.S. Also ahead, actors, musicians, and athletes from around the world will hold a major online event this weekend to honor those on the front line of the coronavirus pandemic. It's all on today's International Edition. President Donald Trump gave governors a roadmap Thursday for recovering from the economic pain of the coronavirus pandemic. During his daily briefing on Thursday, the president laid out what he said is aimed at gradually restoring normal activity in places that have strong testing and are seeing a decrease in COVID-19 cases.
My administration is issuing new federal guidelines that will allow governors to take a phased and deliberate approach to reopening their individual states. I've dealt with them now a long time, and we've had a great relationship. Democrat, Republican, the relationship has been good. This strategy is based on hard, verifiable data.
The new guidelines are aimed at easing restrictions in areas with low transmission of the coronavirus while holding the line in harder hit locations. The guidelines largely reinforce the plans already under development by governors who have the primary responsibility for public health in their states. In New York, the hardest hit state in the U.S., Governor Andrew Cuomo extended stay-at-home restrictions Thursday through mid-May. The state has had more than 12,000 coronavirus fatalities and continues to see about 2,000 new cases daily.
600 people died yesterday from the disease. That is still continuing at a really tragic, tragic rate.
Cuomo also said before he can reopen, the state needs tests. He said, just like PPE, personal protection equipment, and ventilators, everyone in the country will be competing over testing, which is needed to reopen.
Everyone is going right to these labs, and 50 states are competing, and the federal government is buying product from these labs. This has to be figured out, and it can only be figured out in partnership with the federal government.
New York City is foreseeing a $7.4 billion tax loss due to the virus and is seeking federal help. More than 5 million Americans filed for unemployment last month as the coronavirus claimed more jobs. AP correspondent Rita Foley has the story.
Some industries were hit hard early on. Hotels, restaurants, retail stores. Now the coronavirus outbreak is killing a broader array of jobs. Software programmers, salespeople, and legal assistants are being laid off. 68-year-old Fern Weinbaum was furloughed last month from her job as a legal secretary in Manhattan. Weinbaum still hasn't received her unemployment benefits, which she says she's counting on to help pay her monthly rent of $1,100. I'm Rita Foley.
U.S. President Donald Trump is threatening to adjourn Congress because lawmakers have not approved his candidates for senior posts in his administration, including his nominee to run the independent agency overseeing Voice of America. Joining us to talk more about this and Wednesday night's comments by the president is VOA White House Bureau Chief Steve Herman. Steve, you've been closely following this story. Can you explain what exactly the president means by threatening to adjourn Congress?
That's been the subject as a lot of discussion. What the president is referring to is Article 2, Section 3 of the U.S. Constitution, which does allow the president to adjourn Congress under extraordinary circumstances. Now, no president has ever exercised this specific authority, and there's not much enthusiasm for this among lawmakers members of either party. This could just be one of these extreme statements that we've heard of late from the president, and then he ends up backing away from it.
What's his gripe with Voice of America?
Well, there has been a nominee stuck in the Senate for quite a period of time to run what is now called the U.S. Agency for Global Media. And the U.S. AGM oversees the Voice of America and other non-military international broadcasters that are funded by the United States government. The U.S. AGM is not a household word in the United States. It is the successor agency to what was called the Broadcasting Board of Governors. Mm-hmm. It is a bit remarkable that this has been brought up by the president. This is the latest and most direct salvo fired by the White House at the VOA. It began last week when Dan Scavino, the president's social media director, went after VOA on Twitter, and then a digital newsletter out of the White House called the 1600 Daily, also accused the Voice of America of essentially parroting Chinese propaganda, pointing to a tweet that the VOA had put out running some Associated Press video of a countdown in Wuhan in China, which was the epicenter of the coronavirus epidemic originally. This countdown showing the city getting back on its feet. And not only people at VOA, but across the U.S. Mainstream media in general were very puzzled by these attacks. And now it appears what this was all about was perhaps putting pressure on the U.S. AGM and VOA management, because the VOA director, Amanda Bennett, who has been in this position during the entire Trump administration, was actually appointed by President Trump's predecessor, Barack Obama. And President Trump, as do most presidents, has basically over a period of time cleaned house and replaced the people running government agencies at the federal level with his own people.
I guess it's common for a new administration to come in and want their own people, and that's part of it. But it certainly would seem that President Trump prefers media outlets that have positive comments about his performance. And when they do not, he seems to get very upset about it.
Yes, the president has frequently attacked commercial media, most significantly the Washington Post, New York Times, CNN, MSNBC, CBS, and even Fox News at times, because their reporters have either asked pointed questions to the president that he didn't like, or run with news items that also were not as laudatory as the president would like to have. The VOA, however, although it's 100% funded by the federal government, and everybody, including myself and you, are government employees, it is an independent agency. And there has been in place since the presidency of Gerald Ford a charter and a firewall in place that prevents any administration from overtly telling VOA what to broadcast or what not to broadcast. And since the beginning of VOA in 1942, that has been a source of VOA's credibility, that VOA reports factually, tells it like it is, and when it comes to the United States, reflects both sides of any particular debate on important issues that might be happening in the country. And Amanda Bennett, in the defense of the agency, has pointed this out in her statements, saying that judging from the way our audiences are surging to us, seeking information they can rely on in this coronavirus crisis, the world believes in our mission. It's hard work and it's important work, perhaps more than ever before.
VOA White House Bureau Chief Steve Herman, thank you so much for being with us. The Italian company Advent SRL, which produces investigational medicinal products, says it will be ready with the first doses of a COVID-19 vaccine by the end of this month. Fast-tracked clinical trials of the candidate vaccine will be launched by the University of Oxford Jenner Institute in Britain. Sabina Castelfranco has more for VOA.
With mounting deaths around the world from COVID-19, the race is on to find a vaccine. One of the five front-runner vaccines currently under development is called ChAdOx-1 nCoV-19 and is expected to be ready for clinical testing in the next couple of weeks. The vaccine seed stock was produced by the Oxford University Jenner Institute in Britain. It was transferred to Italian manufacturer Advent SRL, part of the IRBM group, which is producing an initial batch of 1,000 vials. IRBM Managing Director Matteo Liguori says the Jenner Institute project fundamentally involves replicating the spike protein, which is the aggressive protein of COVID-19. His company recently received the DNA of that protein from the British Institute and is now working to add it to the adenovirus it has developed. He added that the adenovirus would essentially work as a vector in order for the spike protein to replicate inside the human body that will in this way develop antibodies to protect it from future contact with COVID-19.
We produce the vials that will go back to the Jenner Institute so that they can test on human the vaccine and collect data and verify that the vaccine is safe and has the right efficacy.
The Jenner Institute had already been using the experimental vaccine candidate to target another coronavirus, Middle East Respiratory Syndrome, MERS, which in the first clinical trials had shown to induce strong immune responses against MERS after a single dose. Once the Jenner Institute receives the nearly prepared vaccine from Italy, it will launch its clinical trial on up to 510 healthy British adult volunteers between 18 and 55 years old. Liguori said that the expectation is that by September, testing will be finished and the vaccine will be available initially for health workers.
Because of the urgency that is outside, we are seeing that there is a huge interest to move as fast as possible developing of vaccine. So we can expect that clinical study will be faster than in other situations.
Liguori said there are some 200 scientists from several countries working round the clock at the company's headquarters in Pomezia, just outside Rome, getting the vaccine against the novel coronavirus ready as quickly as possible. Some of them had been involved in the development of the Ebola vaccine in 2014 and 2015. Sabina Castelfranco for VOA News, Rome.
Cameroon's president has announced steps that will lead to the release of thousands of prisoners due to concerns about the coronavirus spreading in overcrowded facilities. However, separatists fighting for an independent English-speaking state and officials jailed for corruption are excluded. Rights groups also say that President Paul Biya's political opponents and journalists critical of his rule will remain behind bars. Moki Edwin Kinzeka reports from Yaoundé.
Bienvenue à tous.
Since late Wednesday, Cameroon State Radio has read out an order signed by President Paul Biya to decrease crowding in the Central African State's 78 prisons.
The President of the Republic hereby decrees as follows. Article 1. Persons whose sentences have become final as at the date of signature of this decree shall benefit from remission as follows. 1. Commutation of the death sentence to life imprisonment in favor of persons initially sentenced to death.
Under the presidential decision, life sentences are reduced to 25 years. Those for whom life sentences had already been reduced to 25 years will have 5 years taken off their sentences. 10-year sentences will be cut by 3 years. 5-year sentences will be cut by 2 years, and 3-year sentences will be cut by 1 year. Lawyer Luke Kisop, who argues the government's position in corruption and terrorism cases, says not everyone will benefit from the initiative, although Biya has the constitutional power to free whoever he wants.
The Constitution authorizes the head of state to commute and remit sentences or convicts. The prerogative rests, therefore, on the head of state to choose who to pardon or who not to pardon. And in this case, certain kinds of offenses have been excluded from those who shall benefit from the measure, like offenses on terrorism, misappropriation of public property, tax fraud, customs fraud, sexual offenses, or offenses which touch on the security of the state.
Others excluded from the order are political prisoners such as Mamadou Mota, vice president of the opposition Cameroon Renaissance Movement Party, who was arrested while protesting the results of the October 2018 presidential election, and separatists fighting for the independence of the English-speaking minority in the majority French-speaking country. Rights activist Njugoy Adu of the Cameroon Center for Democracy and Governance said by messaging app that the 86-year-old Biya has missed an opportunity to make peace with his people. He says Biya, by not pardoning political prisoners and separatist leaders who realize the coronavirus is bringing people together against a common enemy in COVID-19, has missed an opportunity to reconcile with the people he has ruled with an iron fist for close to 40 years. He says Biya still can make history by ordering the release of people he has declared his enemies just because they do not agree with him remaining in power. Others who will not benefit from the order are Biya's former Prime Minister Ephrem Inoni, ex-Minister of Finance Abba Polycarp, and Jean-Marie Atanganamebara, a former Minister of Higher Education. Some have been jailed for more than a decade. Biya ordered their arrest, saying that they plundered state resources, but their lawyers say they are being punished because they advised Biya to step down as president. The presidential decree does not specify how many people will benefit from the order. The Justice Ministry is now examining prisoners' files. However, Ardo and Kisop said at least 10,000 prisoners may be freed. Cameroon currently has 30,000 prisoners in detention facilities constructed for barely 9,000. Moki Edwin Kinzeka for VOA News, Yaoundé, Cameroon.
More than a decade of Boko Haram militant attacks have displaced more than 2 million Nigerians in the country's north, with hundreds of thousands living in internally displaced people's camps. Medical experts worry a lack of spacing and good sanitary conditions in the camps could promote an outbreak of coronavirus, which has so far infected more than 370 people in Nigeria and killed 10. Ifeoke Etang reports from Nigeria.
16-year-old Samuel Adamu is sitting in an uncompleted classroom at the House of Rekab, an orphanage for displaced children in Jos, Nigeria. He's holding a weekly Bible study class along with 11 other children living at the home. Although he prefers to say little about it, Adamu himself has been an internally displaced person since 2014, when Boko Haram militants invaded his hometown of Gwoza in Borno State.
I have lost many things. I have killed my loved ones and many other people that I know.
The conflict in Nigeria's northeast forced more than 2 million people to flee their homes, and 850,000 live in IDP camps. According to the United Nations Office for the Coordination of Humanitarian Affairs, half of the camps are overcrowded. Speaking via Skype, Nigerian physician Dr. Enwongo Ime Campbell says residents of the camp are at high risk of getting infected by a huge range of illnesses, including coronavirus.
Conditions such as cholera, conditions such as tuberculosis, pneumonia. And if you put that in the context of the current pandemic in the world right now, which is the COVID-19, that would be a perfect breeding ground for this illness.
The charity Mercy Corps provides humanitarian aid to the IDP camps in Nigeria's northeast. Speaking via Skype, Maxwell Samaila, the agency program manager on humanitarian response, said improving sanitation in the camp is a challenge.
For us to ensure that people actually practice regular hand washing, we need to have hand washing stations and soap, you know, installed and distributed at every location, almost in all the strategic locations, including camps. So, and, you know, with the current, you know, funding, we may not be able to achieve that because already the funds have been earmarked for some other interventions.
Securing enough food for the camps during Nigeria's restrictions on movement and business is another challenge, Samuel Adamu says.
This thing will really affect us. The places, they're just locking down the places, and we don't know when they will open the place again. So we'll need food items, foodstuffs, so that we'll be able to have food to eat, especially for this period of time.
Nigerian authorities say they are working with the United Nations and other partners to assist IDPs and are also working on providing ventilators, face masks, and personal protective equipment for medical staff in the camps. Ifeok Etang for VOA News, Jos, Nigeria.
As the world continues to respond to the COVID-19 crisis, VOA's Lenore Mudu spoke to philanthropist Melinda Gates, co-founder of the Bill and Melinda Gates Foundation, about what must be done to help those most vulnerable to the pandemic and what can be done to prevent future outbreaks.
The world is seeing an unprecedented crisis with the global pandemic of the COVID-19 coronavirus. First of all, what are your thoughts on what we are seeing right now?
Well, we're still seeing it on the rise in so many places around the world. And I think one of the things we need to recognize as a global community is that COVID-19 anywhere is COVID-19 everywhere. And we're just starting to see the effects on the most vulnerable parts of the population. And I have to be honest, that's the thing that keeps me up at night.
So practically, how do we help vulnerable population, children, pregnant women, even refugees and others? What can we do in this case with COVID-19 to help them?
What do? We make sure, first of all, that they're fed. People need to be able to have a meal. In every single day, they need to have food, because if you don't start there, if people don't have access to food, they have to go out and find food, bring food into their home. We know it's something we all need. So one of the most important things we can do right now, I feel, is tell people we need to put money into making sure that people actually have access to food. Then we have to make sure that women know, if they're pregnant, where can you go safely to still do your prenatal appointments? Where can you go to safely deliver that baby? Don't deliver at home. We have to help, practically speaking, the primary healthcare system separate out the patients who come in who have COVID from, say, patients who come in and are pregnant. That is fundamental in terms of having the healthcare system still work and support women who are pregnant. So those are two very practical examples.
When we think about what's happening in 2015, your husband, Bill Gates, delivered a TED Talk where he really warned people of the greatest threat that was coming up, which will be an infectious virus, highly infectious virus. Now, what has the Bill and Melinda Gates Foundation done in terms of encouraging the world to prepare?
Well, after that TED Talk that Bill did in 2015, we worked with the G7 and to really talk about the Ebola pandemic that had happened, and then to set up something called the Center for Epidemic Preparedness, it's called CEPI, to start to have a place where we could bring together the science of the world to prepare for an epidemic. Unfortunately, not very many leaders took up that rallying call. One of them who did, though, was Chancellor Merkel in Germany. She took it very seriously. And not much later, after she had led the G7, then we set up this CEPI organization. But to be honest, it was not well funded by governments around the world. And if it had been, we wouldn't be in such a terrible place right now in terms of understanding this disease and potentially having some more solutions.
So then today, what is the status with CEPI? Is there enough funding? Who is benefiting from these funds?
So we've seen a number of philanthropists step up and start to fund CEPI now. And the great thing that CEPI can do is it can start to bring in vaccine candidates and compounds and start to move those into preclinical trials and then full trials to eventually manufacture vaccine. And so we're actually moving about 8 vaccine candidates forward, and that will begin the work so that we hopefully in less than 18 months have a vaccine.
And are we going to see a trend in the future? What do experts tell us in terms of this COVID-19 and what we should expect?
Well, I think we always need to be prepared as a world that there are going to be other infections coming, other viruses, and we have to plan for them. Just like we plan now for natural disasters, for an earthquake or for a fire, we actually have to run drills and scenarios of, okay, if we see disease outbreaks somewhere in the world, what do you do to immediately alert all governments, all centers for disease control, start to collect the right data by gender, by type of population, so the world can respond very quickly instead of in this more slow, sort of haphazard way that you're seeing this sort of patchwork quilt that's going on around the world?
That was VOA's Lenore Moudou speaking with philanthropist Melinda Gates. Here are some of the other stories we are following at VOA. In a sign that things are slowly improving, Boeing announced it will restart production of its commercial airplanes next week in the Seattle area, putting about 27,000 people back to work. 44 Guatemalans deported in one flight from the United States this week have tested positive for COVID-19, according to a Guatemalan government official. It comes amid rising rejection of deportees due to virus fears. And a U.S. study of a potential COVID-19 vaccine is being expanded to include older adults, the age group at most risk from the new coronavirus. The shot, made by the National Institutes of Health and Moderna, Inc., is being tested in healthy young and middle-aged adults in Seattle and Atlanta. And now Moderna announcing the study will expand to include older adults divided into 2 age groups, 51 to 70, and those over 70. Stay with VOA for all the latest world news. The Trump administration is gutting a rule credited with cleaning up toxic air at coal plants, the AP's Ed Donahue reports.
This is a rule from the Obama administration that forced coal plants to cut back emissions of mercury and other human health hazards. The current head of the Environmental Protection Agency, Andrew Wheeler, is a former coal lobbyist. Environmental and public health groups and Democrats are criticizing the move while the coronavirus pandemic is taking up the world's attention. The Trump administration contends the cleanup was not appropriate and necessary. EPA staffers' own analysis said the rule held off mercury's devastating neurological damage to children and prevented thousands of premature deaths. Ed Donahue, Washington.
Nice to meet you. Where you been? Taylor Swift, Jennifer Lopez, and Oprah Winfrey have joined a global broadcast special telecast this weekend. The One World Together at Home event Saturday night will recognize the efforts of workers on the front lines of the coronavirus. It will be a combination of music, comedy, and stories from doctors, nurses, and grocery workers. Organizers announced an additional 6-hour streaming event that will also include appearances by major sports stars, including British Formula One racing champion Lewis Hamilton, U.S. Women's World Cup soccer player Megan Rapinoe, World Cup skier Lindsey Vonn, and dozens of other singers, actors, and social media influencers. You've been listening to International Edition. That does it for our show today, but you can always find us at voanews.com. On behalf of our producer, Jackson Wingagne, I'm Laurie London in Washington. Thank you so much for listening. Have a great weekend and be well.
And I'll write your name.